In 2007, the Babylon podcast was our last best hope for more Lost Tales. We thought it failed. But after WonderCon, it became something more. Our last best hope for more Lost Tales geeking. The year is 2008. The name of the show is the Babylon Podcast.
And welcome back to another Babylon Podcast. I am Summer Brooks.
I'm Tim Callender.
And I'm Snotty Nose Kosh Boy. I got a bad case of Vorlon sniffles.
Can Vorlons eat chicken soup?
Heck yeah. Running around, you know, Vorlons can get sick too, you know.
That's pretty obvious.
So tonight's show is going to be sponsored by Kleenex, I think. We're going to have intermittent stop in the programming so that we can get a Kleenex and blow our helmet, which sounds disgusting, doesn't it?
The thing is, with the Vorlons, they've got that vocoder translator thing, so you never know if they're coughing or what. It's just, you know, random noises.
Oh, my gosh. I've been fighting something for over almost 2 weeks now. It's just making me nutty, and I know that I'm not alone with this, that there's all kinds of illness flowing around, at least Los Angeles, that I've witnessed firsthand. I'm sure there's more, and there's hurricanes and power outages, and my gosh, what's the world? And then the stock market tumbling, and businesses going out, and government bailing, and oh my, what's the world coming to, Tim? Make it stop!
I've been trying to, but our alien overlords haven't shown up yet.
Bastards.
Speaking of alien overlords, which we really weren't, I did manage to listen to show 128, and a little surprised that Brad, our intrepid editor, without power, I believe, what he dropped in, which was a brand new song from the great Luke Ski. Have you guys had a chance to hear that?
Oh, yes. Oh. That is brilliant.
It was fantastic.
You're brilliant.
Fantastic. He does an amazing Veer and Londo. I think he captured the essence of both that. Jeffrey, he took the song Just a Gigolo and reworked it, and it became Just Mr. Londo.
Oh, and it's
brilliant.
He even has the little rap, the little scat rap towards the end in there. Oh, my word. That was just awesome.
And he also bemoans the fact that in 15 years, there hasn't been enough Babylon 5 related material to make a whole album. So I wonder if Luke is going to be taking it on single-handedly.
And I also enjoyed that Jamaican Babylon 5 video that you guys sent earlier this week.
Rapid Eye found that apparently it's a promo, a new thing that is being used to promote the WB's website where you can watch B5 episodes, and they spelled
really?
His name wrong.
Well, I thought it was hilarious.
It was.
And is that video, do we now have that up on our site?
Yes.
Are we going to?
It is on there right now.
Ah, yep. Oh, that's great news.
And speaking of the site, I just posted up something this very evening. Robert Chimbo, listener, forwarded to the Gmail account an article from a UK news site. Don't know if there's BBC or what. It's an article, a quick little piece about George Takei's wedding to his longtime manager and partner, Brad Altman. But what's of significance to us as Babylon 5 fans is the photo. The photo shows Takei and his partner and Michelle Nichols and Walter Koenig. Now, everybody is giving the Vulcan salute except for Walter, who, you see, unfortunately, his left hand is clenched in a fist from when he was a child before he joined Psycor.
That looked like a good party, Just looking at the picture, it looked like that would have been a party to be at.
I'm sure it would have. Sure, it would have been. Would have been fun. But no, my guess is that Walter Koenig is holding his hand in the Bester fist, just to kind of, I don't know, metaphorically thumb his nose at the Star Trek fan.
I saw Walter the other day. He lives across the street from the mine, and I don't bother him. You know, when I go over to my buddy's house all the time, but I try not to bother Walter's. But I just saw him the other day. Oh, and guess who? I had a celebrity sighting this morning. Guess who I came within inches of today? That I kind of had to do that awkward, you know, that thing, that human shuffle that we have to do when two people get like they're just walking along and somehow their paths crisscross at exactly the same moment, you know, and the, you have to kind of do that little dance to walk around somebody so that you don't bump into them. My sighting was with Lawrence Fishburne this morning.
Wow.
I came within inches and gave him a big smile and a nod, and he gave me a smile and a nod, and part of that was, you know, because we were just humans trying to exist on the planet without running over each other, and the other was, of course, you know, I recognized him as a big star, and then, of course, he recognized me as a huge star, and I'm sure he's a big fan, so... Okay. Let's quit trying to be funny because it hurts.
Well, you should have just said, hey, thanks for all the time you spent as Cowboy Curtis.
Imagine if we would have had Lawrence Fishburne on Babylon 5. That would have been cool. Okay, and the other bit of news, Michael, is that with fingers crossed, next Wednesday show, the Farpoint Media Los Angeles studios will be back up and running. Got everything in place. We just don't have our internet connected. That's supposed to be done tomorrow. So we'll be off the cell phone and back in the studio starting next week.
Awesome. I'll be standing by the emergency phone line.
Very cool.
Oh, you little face. Hey, and when do we have a feedback palooza coming up soon?
Trying to. You know, things have been a little light on the feedback front.
You guys aren't controversial enough. You got to piss some people off so they send in some voicemail.
Well, I tell you what, I was. We're trying to work on a couple things here. I won't say anything more than that.
We're working on a couple of interviews.
Yeah.
I realized that one request, I replied to her, she never got it. So I had to reply again.
So we're working on some of that. And it could also be that I've been reading one or two, you know, we've been kind of going through as we've got them, and which really means that I've been more responsible than, I mean, because part of the feedback palooza happens because of to be a lazy sod and these things back up. So there's the horrible truth. Well, I would say it's probably a good enough time to take a break, let Jeffrey rest his pipes, and you know, do some beekeeping.
On the next Babylon 5, Garibaldi becomes a gun for hire.
Of course, it means going up against your own security team.
I don't have a problem with that at all.
But when Sheridan discovers his treacherous mission...
You've jeopardized this station, and you damn near got me killed.
The battle between old friends is about to explode.
You are playing a dangerous game, Captain.
On the next Babylon 5.
PopSyndicate.com. Your one stop for all your unhealthy obsessions. Breaking news and in-depth reviews on all of your favorite movies, music, TV shows, podcasts, comics, books. PopSyndicate.com.
Digging down into the most obscure facts and fandom, this is
And we have returned to avail ourselves of deep, deep geeking, in-depth intellectual critical analysis of conflicts of interest.
Yes. You know, watching this episode again, two things struck me. Number one, and this is a more trivial matter we can discuss later on, there was a lot of really cool CGI going on in the show, especially for an episode that was plot-wise not a a CGI intensive story. The other thing is, I really got caught up in a lot of the tension that was going on in that episode. You know, even knowing what was happening, you know, the intensity of the performances and the intensity of the story really drew me in. It was very compelling that way.
Yeah, I was amazed at how the tension between Zach and Garibaldi built.
Yeah. And yeah. Poor Zach. I mean, even after being promoted to chief of security, he's still the poor schlub in the middle, you know? And and this is, you know, again, it's one of those things where Zach's just trying to do his job. And he's trying not to make it a personal thing, but Garibaldi takes it personally when Zach comes and asks for his link and his identicard and his PPG, both of them. And, you know, I think the thing is that Zach would have just let it go. You know, he would have, you know, still felt hurt by Garibaldi's response, but I think he would have ultimately just kind of written it off. But when Garibaldi uses his second identicard to smuggle Lise into the station, you know, there's Zach feeling as though his trust has been betrayed. So he starts locking, you know, Garibaldi out, and you can just see his frustration with it. And that's one of the things. I mean, this episode really ratchets up those tensions. You know, the one guy does the one thing to the other guy, so he responds in kind. It's a vicious circle. That's what I'm looking for.
And I have to, you have to take a step back and wonder how much of that is his programming that's pushing him away from everything that he cared about on purpose.
Well, you know, and it could be, but see, you know, that's one of the things that's really well done, especially in this particular episode. At the beginning, when Garibaldi is talking with the gentleman who had hired Garibaldi to find his daughter, and they have the heartwarming reunion, and Garibaldi says, "Well, you know, I didn't tell you because I wouldn't have gotten to see this." Mm-hmm. And, you know, it does a nice job of throwing off the scent, if you will. I mean, it's like, we know at this point, having seen the show godzillion times, that Garibaldi's under the influence of the programming, but it's not necessarily overriding. But those little moments, it's like you see the real Garibaldi peeking out. So it makes you wonder how much of the other stuff, the other tensioning, not tensioning, but, you know, the other antagonistic part of it is just naturally Garibaldi.
I think it was ratcheted up because of the program. Because we had not seen him be that confrontational before. You know, he was always willing to give people he trusted the benefit of the doubt. And as we found out later, they sort of enhanced a little bit of his emotional tendencies, which included paranoia and distrust.
Right, and aggression, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, but the scenes with, I was going to get into the scene with Garibaldi and Sheridan toward the end.
Well, I want to talk about the Daffy Duck cartoon first, because I honestly, literally, this was the first time that I actually made the connection. You know, before
yeah,
I was just
yeah.
Like, oh yeah, he's just watching a, he's watching, you know, his hero Daffy Duck, and I'm like, wait
right.
a minute, that's the episode where Bugs is messing with Daffy the whole time. That's very telling.
Oh yeah, it's very symbolic. Absolutely, I mean that's intentional. And if you go on Lurker's Guide, JMS confirmed that was specifically chosen for
that was intentional. Okay.
Overtones. But that's a great cartoon. And like you said, it's just, you think it's Garibaldi just watching Daffy Duck, but you think about the overtones to it. Wade shows up, offers Garibaldi a particular job, and it involves him going up against his own, you know, what is formerly his own men. And of course, Garibaldi, at this point, you know, having been pissed off by Zach asking for his his gun in his badge, basically. He's, you know, all up for sticking his thumb in the eye of the man. And now let me ask you something, Summer. Watching it again this time, we know that the attempted hit on Lease was part setup. Okay, I mean, that's implied when Wade's talking with his henchman guy there. You know, that, you know, Garibaldi's expendable and, you know, we're going to see, you know, how he responds under pressure. So, you know, that whole thing was a setup, okay? But I've always gotten the impression that I think it was a lot bloodier than Wade had anticipated it being. What's your sense of that?
I always assumed that, well, what we learned later was that Psycor knew about this and had been trying to intercept it the whole way. I thought those were, I'm not going to say, freelancers isn't the right word because Psycor doesn't believe in freelancers, but they were sent out on a mission to intercept this package.
Yeah.
And just Garibaldi figured it out. He's like, okay, this, you know, they're working on something for telepaths, you know, that might help telepaths. So maybe they're using a telepath to find us. You know, his ability to think quickly, figure out things quickly, maybe was a way of either killing him or actually probably just a way to push him in, you know, a position to where he would be better able to accomplish his mission.
Yeah, okay. Okay. Like I said, I always got the sense that, you know, there was supposed to be some rough stuff, but not to the level that it became. I don't know.
I never saw it as Edgar's man expecting it to be, you know, a fight, like a fisticuffs kind of thing. Uh-huh. I mean, he wouldn't have said, you know, hey, if he dies, we didn't lose anything. So he's expecting bodies to hit the floor at some point in time because of how dangerous this stuff is.
Okay. Then in that case, he's being a very good actor because he looks scared as hell.
He literally might not have expected them to come at him in a crowded place. Or he might have been worried, oh, hell, what happens to my liver if the boss's wife dies?
that could be. that could very well be.
You've got the guy who owns the top medical firm on Mars, probably one of the top 10 companies in Earth Alliance.
Yeah.
And, you know, hey, people who fail him in his black ops, they might end up as medical research.
You never know. I really did like the scene with Garibaldi and Lease in Garibaldi's quarters when they're catching up. I thought that was very well written and very well acted.
That was interesting from Garibaldi's point. He turned on her very quickly when he realized who it was she had married.
Yeah. I loved it when the dawning realization. Oh, let's see. You know, Bill. Wait a minute. Bill Eggers. Not the William Eggers. And she's like, yeah. 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 Good stuff. I mean, there's the tension there. And you know, he's obviously trying to keep her at arm's length.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you definitely got a sense of two people who have never quite been on the same page at the same time. You know, we see, of course, through the flashbacks, but we know, you know, she basically gives him the ultimatum, you know, make your choice, go to Babylon 5 or stay with me, but that's your choice, you know, and of course he was all completely messed up. Mm-hmm. And now the roles are reversed. I mean, even given the sense of the programming that's in there for Garibaldi, but the fact is that he's found his place. He is where he belongs. And she's the one now that's, you know, she married this Franz guy who turned out to be a cad, stolen a daughter. She's been at the mercy of EarthGov law. You know, she married this guy. And, of course, you know, she doesn't say anything about love. She just mentions that he's, you know, kind and gentle. But, you know, I think she saw Garibaldi, and the torch kind of got rekindled. And of course, he's scared of that. So, and it's telling at the end when they come down out of the ventilation shaft in the middle of the corridor there, mm-hmm. and you know, Garibaldi sends her away with Wade. It's just like, what about you? And he's like, look, you know, I'd have to say goodbye to you one way or the other. You know, I mean, you can tell it's no longer the gruff, you know, hard-nosed exterior. It very much was, you know, after all the fear, the tension of being shot at and chased by the telepath hitmen, that his true feelings had emerged, you know, because he was actually very tender toward her. You know, it's like, you got to go, okay? I'm glad to see you again. I'm glad that you're in good hands. See ya.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, so we also see Ivanova working to put the pieces of the new broadcast.
Yes. Loved the scene with Zathras. Excuse me, I love the scene with Zathras.
No, it was Zathras.
Zathras. There are 10 of us. No, 9 now. Zathras never listened to them. You know, it was so over the top, but it worked so well.
I want to know how he was able to do that with a straight face. I really do, because that was crazy.
Yeah. The whole bit with the dirt, Zathras talked the dirt. Talk to the walls.
And the bugs. Insects. Insects do not talk, but they are good for protein.
You know, poor Ivanova, she's just got to put up with it. You know, it's just all there is to it. She has to. I don't know. Like I said, it was so silly and yet just a ton of fun. And that, you know, we've talked about this before, but that I think that also it's one of Straczynski's strength as a storyteller is that he, when he gives us such amazing silliness, part of the intent is obviously, you know, the laughter, but the other part of it is that it really does serve as a counterpoint and heightens the tension and the drama elsewhere in the episode. And one of the things we see in terms of drama is we get Sheridan sitting in this darkened office. It's almost as though it is the physical manifestation of the dark places that Delenn referred to that he would have to go to in order to get his job done.
I noticed, like, literally, the entire episode seemed to be darker. I mean, the scenes in Sheridan's office seemed to be far darker than normal. The shadows playing off of Sheridan's face were more pronounced. I thought that was a technique to use, because literally he himself is darker. He realizes he's going to have to take a darker path in order to get what he has to do done with Earth.
Yeah.
When we start to see some of that getting put together, even in his talk with Jakar and Londo, he's, you know, starting to put certain pieces together, and you could infer that the darkness in there is still the unfinished business between Londo and Jakar too.
Yeah, even after all they had been through, helping each other to free each other's people, you know, Jakar can barely step into the same room with Londo.
Mm-hmm.
And to your point about the darkness there, even though Sheridan is offering a plan of hope,
mm-hmm.
I didn't get the sense that he was, I got to think how I want to phrase this. This is what I was going to say, those white stars, they're going to go out there anyway.
Mm-hmm.
All right. It would be really nice for Sheridan to have the Centauri and the Narn working with him on that. And this, you know, and as he says, it's easy to band together for a common enemy. Now let's do it for a common goal. But you know what? those white shirts are going to go out whether they say yay or nay.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a difference. You know, Sheridan is now willing to risk a public relations landmine, if you were, or minefield. You know, as Londo and Shakar point out, you know, it's going to look like you're making a power grab if you do this. And, you know, Sheridan's response is, well, they're wrong, but we got to do it. So, yeah, he's not waiting around to play nice.
And I think
he
it's...
Wants him on the, sorry?
Yeah, no, I was like, it's very interesting that this is the one place we get a tidbit that the Centauri are the only ones who know, who've even heard of the Drak before.
Oh, yeah.
You know, he's like, oh, yeah, they're legend, no one years. And everybody else is like, the who?
Yeah.
And it's and that it actually, learning that makes sense as to why they went to Centauri Prime first.
Right.
You know, it adds a little, another level of I guess, what's the word? I'm going to say intimacy, because they have, the Centauri remember the Drak down through history. So it makes more sense when we see that they've put a keeper on the region. Maybe it's their way of saying, you know, hey, these people have a fear of us, they have a knowledge of us. And, oh, yeah, as a bonus, they help defeat the Shadows. Let's take them on, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with you. The roots are already there. Yeah, let's see. What else? We get that great scene with Sheridan and Garibaldi at the end of the episode after everything's all played out. And Sheridan comes down on him with both feet. We got three dead bodies on the deck. You're mixed up in this. You know, you're on the authorized use of an identicard. You know, it just starts kind of listing them off, and Garibaldi's like, hey, you got nothing on me, Captain. I mean, it's almost, you know, Garibaldi is now sitting in the perp seat.
He's taunting him.
Yeah. Yeah. And that look out as Garibaldi leaves after Sheridan basically says, you're here at my sufferance.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I'm going to shut you down if you being a pain in the ass. And yeah. Garibaldi, as he leaves, shoots this look at Zach like, you know, see what I told you? Oh, this is what you're working for, huh? Mm-hmm. You know, it's just like,
yeah, I mean, the whole thing, he was defiant, condescending, like, you know, hey, I have new friends. I'm above all this. You don't matter to me anymore. Get out of my face. Who are you to tell me what to do, kind of thing. And that literally, you see the slight difference in his face. That's the wall that the programming is building up between him and his old attachments.
Yeah. And this one, you know, this is something that I was reflecting on as Garibaldi tells Zach toward the beginning of the episode, when Zach asks him how he's doing. And Garibaldi basically says, you know what, when you're in the command staff, you got this big picture thing, but you're kind of removed from what's going on. And now here, it's a personal level, and I'm able to make a difference. And I think what we're really seeing, the show as a whole has now taken that tone. Things are now more personal. You know, even though there was great drama and great characters through all the machinations of the Shadow War, that was big picture stuff. That was big, sweeping, epic stuff. We are now at that level where it's, you know, former friends turning into enemies. It's Sheridan and Garibaldi starting to butt heads, and neither of them quite understanding why things have turned sour. It's Zach having to stand in the middle. You know, he knows something's up with the chief, can't put his finger on it, would like to still think of him as his friend, but he's got a job to do. And, you know, the irony is that's something that Garibaldi taught him, you know, do your job. You've got Delenn is about to upcoming. She's going to be facing off with Nerun. That's a personal threat of bad blood that needs to be resolved. So all these things, it's like it's a different show now. You know, it's the same, but it's different. And this episode, to me, really brought that home.
Now, I will make one comment about something I just a few minutes ago read on the Lurker's Guide. I hadn't known that some people had raised the question whether or not this supposed virus that only affects telepaths, is what they're being told,
right,
was planned, could have been because of planned Vorlon obsolescence. Like, what if the Vorlons had designed telepaths in only certain, all of these races to only flourish for a certain time, and then when the Shadow Wars were over, they would just eventually die out because they weren't needed anymore. And I was like, huh, that's a very interesting...
Yeah, I don't know. I never got that. I mean, I'm not saying that it's necessarily wrong thinking, and of course, as we know, the Lurker's Guide, a lot of those questions and analyses were developed at the moment when the show first aired. I never would have considered that. My thought was that it's more like what actually transpires, is that the Vorlons developed the telepathy, and the humans use as cannon fodder when they're gone is just a tool they've discarded.
Right, but the tool, how do you just discard a tool that it just doesn't go away?
Well, but see, that's indicative of the arrogance of the Vorlons, if you're looking at it from that point of view.
Oh, they thought they would all be killed off being used in the war?
No, not even that. It's Summer, when you've stopped using a hammer and you put it back up on the wall in the workshop, do you worry about what the hammer's thinking or doing or feeling? No, you don't, because it's just a tool. And, obviously the difference is that with telepaths, they're living, breathing, sentient beings with their own thoughts, feelings, or whatever else. All I'm saying is that the arrogance of the Vorlons, they would simply view them as a tool and, not as a danger for the future. It just wouldn't have entered into their calculations.
I think it's interesting because we've seen how in human society, telepaths are treated with fear and suspicion. In Minbari society, they're revered. And in, we don't get a sense of how they're treated on Centauri Prime. They're used as tools, but, do they feel like they're being isolated? Do they feel superior? Or are they so caught up in the political house, royal house games that, like all the other Centauri are, that they just don't care? It's more about house than it is about, teeth versus non-teeth.
Yeah, I would say in terms of the Centauri, I think you probably hit it right on the head. I wouldn't think that, as we see through Bester, he considers telepaths to be a new and better breed of humans. So that makes them different and superior than mundanes. I would guess from what we've seen, and I think your analysis is correct, that for Centauri, it's all about houses and not about, that's how you define your group, not what you have in common in terms of abilities, skills, or what have you. So that at that point, a large group of telepaths isn't a threat because they're not working together as telepaths on a telepath agenda. It's interesting, as we've been talking here, that's the one thing we don't know about any other telepaths and any other of the races, whether or not those were created through Vorlon meddling. I mean, you could almost say in the sense of the case of the Minbari, you would think that would be true.
Well, look, we actually have a pretty good clue later that is true, because we've seen the one flashback that Lita has when she's with Byron. You see the tubes. You see a Minbari in there. You see what looks like a Drazi in there. I think in one of them, what looks like a Pachmara can be seen in there.
I'm going to have to go back and look at that. You're right. I remember that scene now that you mentioned it. But I don't remember who else was in that tube. I'll have to watch, go back and watch that and report back on next Wednesday. Yeah, good point.
Did we cover everything?
Well, you know, just one last comment that I would like to point out that I touched on at the beginning of the geeking, and that was the CGI. There were so many new and fresh shots in this show, in this episode, which really wasn't a CGI-heavy story. There's a great shot of, looks like a couple space-suited figures welding a panel outside the station, and then the camera pulls back and then swings over the spine of the station and runs toward the front of it. We get a number of shots going in and out of the dock, the main docking bay there.
One shot where the shuttle takes off and then comes around for approach to Epsilon 3.
There's also, even to that point, the cherry red glow of the nose of the shuttle from entering the atmosphere. You know, little touches like that. It's so full of those in this episode. It was really, and it's not that it was jarring or took me out of the show. It was just like, wow, they pull out all the stops on this one.
And you have to, you know, it actually adds to it because when you said, yeah, the amount of CGI in this was amazing, I had to stop and think. It was so interwoven into the story. You didn't really pay attention to the fact that there was more CGI. You just, you know, expected it. Okay, someone's going on a shuttle ride. You go look at them. They're installing the new... The new power unit, the collector unit to do the broadcast, no problem. It's gotten to the point where we expect to see the external scenes. And that the fact that we do, and they're just there, I'm like, oh, there was more CGI for a non-battle scene, wasn't there?
Yeah. Neat stuff. All right, I think we've covered it. What do you think?
I think we got it.
Yep.
All right, then that will conclude our speaking for Conflicts of Interest. We will be back very shortly to wrap this up.
The actual beginning, though, it's not really the beginning, but the actual flashpoint was, I remember very clearly, I remember picking up a paper and actually finding a particular paper was left blank. Glorious. Nothing to read, so I scribbled on it like, in a hole in the ground, delivered a hobbit.
The complaint often made against them is that they mix what some people call the realistic and the fantastic. I'd rather fall back on an older critical terminology and say that they mix the probable and the marvelous.
In 1939, the greatest authors of the 20th century gathered every Tuesday to discuss their latest writing projects. Early works of Tolkien's Lord of the Rings and C.S. Lewis's Out of the Silent Planet were first read at England's meetings. The group has since disbanded, but the spirit lives on. Fast forward to 2008 and join hosts Steve Saylor and Shane Shannon as they upgrade the spirit of Inklings to version 2.0. This podcast is the place on the web where creative minds can gather and discuss the creative arts. Whether you're an author, a painter, a musician, doesn't matter. This show, we hope, will inspire, showcase, and create awesome works to share on these internet tubes we call home. Inklings 2.0. Subscribe today at inklings20.com.
We're back to close this episode out. Timothy.
No. Do I really sound that bad over the cell phone? Does it?
It sounds like you're listening a lot. No.
I'm sorry. All the listeners are going to get infected now. I'm so sorry. Typhoid Jeffrey here.
This podcast needs to be sanitized before use.
No. Right. Yeah.
Quarantine.
Make sure you wash your ears after listening. It's just wrong. I'm so sorry, guys. But like a valiant trooper, at least. Although I missed last week's show, didn't I?
Yeah.
Was I working last week or was I sick? I don't know.
Oh, you were sick last week.
What episode is this?
This is, we are currently recording number 130.
130. Aren't we just bad? Yeah. Cool.
We've been doing this a while. Mm-hmm. Hey, look, I've got an email here that I think might spur a little conversation. This comes to us from longtime listener Hillary Giffen. She writes in, who is going to give Sheridan a bachelor party? The best man arranges the party, but the obvious choice was Garibaldi, who wasn't really on good terms at the moment. Runner-up would be Franklin, but he's out on assignment. So who's left to step up? Lorian, too old. Lanier, too in love with a bride-to-be. Ivanova, too professional a relationship. Londo, too likely to get the hairy eyeball from Delenn. Jakar, too likely to leave his eyeball somewhere he can peep in on them. Corwin, too low on the totem pole. Marcus, too busy playing with his pole. Veer, too beer. Zach, too new to the command staff. And Kosh, too dead. But wouldn't it have been a hoot to see what he came up with?
That's so, actually a pretty funny thought.
So Jeffrey, I guess that does beg the question, if a Vorlon was throwing a bachelor party, what would it be like?
Yeah, exactly. Would we have to import some professional girls for the event, or what might be the libation that would be appropriate, you know, for the at this point he's president of the alliance, right? I mean,
you'd have to have a girl in an encounter cake.
Yeah. Yeah. Popping up out of the helmet.
Do that whole Marilyn Monroe thing.
Mr. President.
Yeah, that would be good.
You could get her standing over a ventilation shaft and have her blow up her shower curtain.
It'd be fun, like late hours, you know, middle of the night. Sheridan's calling around on his knees, barfing because he's been drinking too much, you know, and just all blurry eyed. But imagine Delenn's face when she sees him the next morning or smells him the next morning.
Huh.
Yeah.
And see, now I would his sister have been a good candidate to throw to at least arrange a bachelor party?
Well, hard to say because at this point in time, you know what I mean? They get married after they liberate Earth, don't they?
Mm-hmm.
So there's that possibility. Yeah.
They were on Earth. They got married. They hopped the White Star back to
B5. Yep.
So yeah, his sister could have at least pulled the strings. She could have been coordinating efforts from instigating, because that's what sisters do for their brothers.
Indeed.
They instigate. So yes, I think she could have handled that quite well.
All right.
You know, and I could see some of Sheridan's buddies, you know, when they're really getting hammered, and they're trying to do that whole, dude, are you sure you're going to do this? You know, and like, hey, you do realize she's got a bone on her head, right?
Oh, no.
Just, you know, are you cool with that?
I'm trying to imagine the command staff of the Agamemnon drunk off their asses singing Louie Louie.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Right. Oh my God. Down below karaoke.
Yeah, yeah. They all go up to CMC, you know, and they're all just hammered, you know, and they're laying there pushing buttons and stuff, and Sheridan's up there going, "Watch this, watch this. I'll make B5 spin the other way. Watch this." Everybody on the station like falls to their knees and then starts floating upwards the wrong way and for anti gravity. It'd be great. That'd be messy. Vegas, baby.
Oh, I love it. I love it.
Sure, and bachelor party. That's a good time. What other email, Tim? Hasn't anybody written us?
I've got one more thing here to read. This comes to us from a young lady who calls herself Star Stuff, and she writes, "Hey guys, I have been following your show since January this year, and it's been my ray of sunshine ever since. It was especially cool to listen to." Yeah, maybe poor Star Stuff doesn't have much of a life.
No, I'm sorry. I just had a moment. That's all.
It was especially cool to listen to the cast interviews and then see Bruce Boxleitner and Peter Jurasik live on stage at FedCon in Bonn, Germany in February. I've been listening to the podcast every day on my way to work and back, and I guess that now I have a reputation as a slightly crazy person here in my hometown of Dresden, Germany. You guys made me grin and chuckle all the time. Imagine how strange that must have seemed to other passengers on the tram or bus who had no idea why this weird person next to them burst out laughing all of a sudden. I won't even start on how many times my colleagues asked me if everything was all right with me, because I came in wiping tears from my eyes. You guys are just so hilarious together. You make it not just fun to listen to you, but you keep Babylon 5 alive. Since you've given me so many hours of joy, seriously, I thought I'd return the favor, and I donated $50. I know it's not much, but I want you guys to keep on going with the show. Great job so far.
Wow.
Well, thanks for that, Star Stuff. Wow. We really do appreciate that.
Yeah, absolutely. That's very nice. I wonder what show she's actually listening to, because it can't be the B5 podcast.
Well, you know, here's the thing. There's two types of listeners I think we've got. One are the longtime listeners who've been with us since the beginning and are just crazy enough to keep coming back. And then there's the wackos who find the show like a few months ago and then go on this rampage and download everything and stuff it into their ears in the space of a month.
Right.
I mean, I'm going
to have to... Neither one of those make us funny.
So, yeah, I don't know.
I just can't imagine that we make anybody cry because it's so funny. I can see us making people cry, but not because we're
I can think of one instance where we made people cry.
The duck.
Bookie, bookie, bookie.
The bookie, bookie, bookie. You got it.
Well, the bookie, bookie was pretty special. Yeah, exactly. And the duck story was a good one.
The duck story was, I almost pulled a muscle at the duck story, but yeah, the bookie, bookie, bookie. Mike overreacting with the boogie 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 cracked me the hell up. And I was sitting right there beside him, couldn't believe what I was seeing and hearing, and I couldn't breathe for the laughing. So yes, we spread joy. That is our lot.
That so should be up on a wiki somewhere.
Well, I just refound the MP3 again and relinked it in because Anna's blog had an old link to it. So I said, hey, you have to update that link. She's like, oh, my God, okay.
Well, I definitely got a new promo intro for this show then. So, yeah.
I was at a stoplight a few days ago. I actually started thinking about the thing and started cracking up out of nowhere. So anyways, if anybody else out there who has claimed to derive some joy from this thing we call the Babylon podcast, please feel free to be as moved as Star Stuff and donate.
We want to hear stories of you spitting beverage all over your computer or almost swerving off the road laughing so hard.
Or, no. We don't want that. That's liability.
I said almost.
We don't want the stories of you plowing into a crowd of pedestrians on the corner of the road because you started cracking up at something Jeffrey said.
Or if we imparted some bit of arcane knowledge that you didn't know. You know, if that was like, wow, I never knew that, let us know. Because knowledge and laughter, we are doing good things for the world if we are spreading knowledge and laughter.
Yes, and one last thing, since we're talking about knowledge, I don't know about laughter, response on the comments from, I think, episode 127 regarding our discussion of Star Furies versus Vipers.
Mm-hmm.
Evan asked, what about X-Wings? Well, my opinion for Evan, that X-Wings don't stand a chance against either of them.
Mm-hmm.
X-Wings behave as though they're still plowing through atmosphere.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. They got nothing. Jalopies, that's what they are.
All right. Any other bits before we close this thing up?
Not that I can think of.
Okay. Jeffrey, you got anything else?
Everything I have is not nice.
Oh. Yeah, I think you really blew it with that pun.
It's nothing to sneeze at.
Get us out of here, Summer, quickly.
It's time. If you want to leave your own feedback, send us an email, babylonpodcast@gmail.com. You want to get in on the never-ending argument, there's a thread over at farpointforums.com that literally is never-ending. It's the same comment thread that's been going for a year and a half. It's amazing.
Or you could just send your boogers. We'll have a booger check. We'll see who's got bigger boogers.
Come to the website, babylonpodcast.com. See all the other little tidbits that you're missing. And there's a great big orange donate button. Please donate, help us out. And If you want to call in your own voicemail, please give Tim voicemail to process so we can have another Feedback-a-palooza. That number is 206-338-2259. That's 206-338-2259.
The year that Jeffrey sneezed upon us all.
God bless NyQuil.
And we'll see you next time on the other side of the antihistamine.